From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. The Supreme Court heard arguments today in a multi-billion-dollar case that could determine the reach of U.S. antitrust laws in punishing global price-fixing conspiracies. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg was at the court.
The case involves vitamins, not the pills you take in the morning, but the kind that are put into everything from animal feed to breakfast cereal. In short, the kind that are sold in bulk by the truckload. For more than a decade, the vitamin sellers secretly conspired to fix prices worldwide. One price fits all. When one of the companies finally tipped off the U.S. Justice Department, the U.S. government brought criminal charges against the other sellers. In the end, a handful of top executives went to jail, and a dozen big-name companies paid a total of $5 billion in damages to people injured in the United States. The question in the case before the Supreme Court today was whether people in other countries who bought bulk vitamins from the foreign price fixers can sue in the U.S. courts for damages. On the steps of the Supreme Court today, lawyers for the vitamin sellers declined to comment, but Tom Goldstein, who represents the vitamin purchasers, said that in a global market, no one should be exempt from penalties under U.S. law.
They've been punished to the tune of $5 billion. The problem is that they made $18 billion, and you're never going to deter somebody unless you take the money out of their pocket.
Inside the Supreme Court, lawyer Stephen Shapiro, representing the companies convicted of price fixing, said U.S. courts have no role to play in cases involving purely foreign commerce. Justice Kennedy, is it all that clear that in the real world, foreign commerce is distinct from domestic commerce? Justice Scalia, because the market is worldwide, the argument is that without price fixing, there would have been competition from U.S. companies. Answer, all the people injured in the U.S. have already been compensated. Congress only intended the treble damage remedy to apply to U.S. commerce, and it was expected that the other countries would pass their own laws. Shapiro pointed to Japan and five Western European countries as examples. Justice Scalia, but these are countries with quite effective antitrust enforcement. What about other countries where there is none? Answer, Congress wanted to encourage them to do the job for themselves and not rely on the U.S. Consider the burden that would be placed on a single U.S. federal court judge if he had to figure out the damages from 192 countries. Justice Stevens, puckishly, well, I suppose that's the penalty for engaging in a worldwide conspiracy. When it came time for lawyer Tom Goldstein on the other side to argue, he had an even tougher sell. Justice Breyer, what business do we have telling Japan that this conduct is illegal there if they think cartels are just fine? Isn't that legal imperialism? Answer, because the Justice Department prosecuted this case as a global price-fixing conspiracy, geographic boundaries didn't matter. And our antitrust law, in order to deter such conduct, permits anyone who's been injured to sue to recover damages, regardless of his location. Justice Ginsburg, but other nations don't like our treble damages. Justice Breyer, it doesn't take a Nobel laureate in economics to figure out that if these price fixers are drawn and quartered, there'd be less price fixing. Answer, if there were a country that loved price fixing and liked having expensive products, it would be fine to exempt them, but there isn't. Justice Ginsburg, how about sending their cases back to their home countries if there's an antitrust regime there? Answer, absolutely, and indeed one of our clients in Australia did just that. But where there is no such regime, the U.S. courts should be open. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.